Blog Talk Radio.
Those are the actual bells at Oxford University that rang out yesterday. They pealed out through Paris. They pealed out through Cologne, Germany. And they pealed out all over the globe. But mostly what you heard yesterday in the United States of America was party. Party.
Mm-hmm.
Every major, even in Maricopa County, where a bunch of people were trying to say, oh, it was a ripoff, there were people dancing in the street. It was so much like the night of Obama's win that,
yes.
And I gotta tell you, I mean, you know, I am a progressive. This is, you know, I would have had Elizabeth Warren there. I like Kamala. But, you know, my friend Tracy is right. Grandpa come to give us the ice cream cone. But I got to tell you, that jog he did out onto the, I was like, wow.
Yeah, he was great. He really was.
He didn't make a mistake. And tonight I have the progressive professor Ronald Feynman with me and host Wayne Johnson, and the star of our Monday evening show is with us, Sybil. Sybil, are you with us, Mommy?
I certainly am, and I jogged to my phone just now because I was trying to be like Joe, and I'm going to call him Uncle Joe because he's everybody's favorite uncle now.
Absolutely.
And I was jogging to my phone, and I tripped over the cat, and I sprained my ankle, and I'm so glad that Joe didn't do the same thing. So I'm hobbling here, but Joe seems to be, at 800 years of age, he seems to be absolutely great. Great.
I don't think he's even as good during the campaign as last night's speech. I think it was the best speech he's given in a long time, you know?
Yes, he really did knock it out of the park.
He has confidence now. Once you do well, you're winning. I think it affects how you speak to people, too. I really think it does.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
If you have a success, you do begin to stand up straighter. You do walk quicker.
You have confidence, right.
You do have confidence. The amazing thing, gentlemen, is that within 10 minutes on Twitter, you had just about every major leader, included Moki or Moby or whoever it is down in India, who's a nasty bastard.
No, he's horrible.
Yet telling Biden that they're looking so forward to working with him. And, of course, in Germany, she's saying, fill the sign. You know what I mean?
And also Israel's leader, Netanyahu, you know, I think was very quick to welcome Biden, even though he's been close to Trump. So that was good to see.
Well, he's sitting on his own, about to go Boeing over there. But
yes.
The Ukrainian president, Zelensky, was the quickest to come out and say, it was almost as if you could read between the lines that said, oh, thank Jesus.
The only one that hasn't done it is Putin, you know, the Lord and Master over Trump.
Well, I guess he's looking forward to sparring with our administration next year over the sanctions. Who knows? But I know that I watched yesterday many cities, the streets in many cities. And, you know, New York has been a ghost town. But right, Mommy? New York?
Yeah. Well, I'm no longer in New York. It was very strange to be an expatriate or an expat, whatever it is, from New York, and to be watching the film of Washington Square Park, of Union Square, of all of it
Square.
Was just because I lived right there. And so to see it and not be a part of it was a very strange thing, and especially because even though I'm in Philadelphia, not only Pennsylvania, Thank you very much. And my vote did count this time. And Philadelphia, that area, and my vote did count. Thank you very much. We're in the suburbs. We're living on a mountainside here. So, you know, it was just, it was such a strange experience to watch the rest of the world swirl and dance and sing and chant and drink and kiss and everything, and to
yes.
listen to crickets outside. So I just, you know, I felt awkward banging pans and pots here, you know, out on my front porch. Although it's interesting, everybody, and we're waiting to see, George and I are waiting to see, because this is not something I brought up yet to Gwendolyn, was we live in a huge Indian community. So coincidentally,
really?
Yes, where we live on the main line, we are surrounded by Indians and Pakistanis.
Uh-huh.
And that part of Asia is all around us. So we're waiting to see. People are kind of skittish here because for every Trump poster, there was a Biden poster and vice versa. So you don't know, you know, maybe someone who's Indian and perfectly lovely is also a Wall Street person and was heartbroken that Trump was, you know, let go.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we don't know yet what's going to happen, but it was wonderful to see, wonderful to see, wonderful to see young people. I'm getting emotional. Wonderful to see young people cry.
You know, I think it was great
me.
To cry. Yeah, Pennsylvania was a decisive state, and that's where the Constitutional Convention was held that drew up our Constitution,
mm-hmm.
and also the home state where Joe Biden, you know, his early life was in Pennsylvania before they moved to Delaware. So
right,
it's really
right.
wonderful that Pennsylvania was the one that did it.
Yeah,
when
yeah,
Glenn
absolutely.
Called me on Saturday, and then it said that it's final, it has been decided. I went into the living room and basically became a swirling dervish.
Well,
I kept track of the time. It was
11:23
a.m. You know, Eastern Time that it happened. That they said it on MSNBC. 11:23 yesterday. Imagine that! I couldn't believe it. I was waiting so long for 4 days and worn out already. It's like, come on already, you know. But I'm glad that it worked out. And it looks like Georgia will probably, too, when Stacey Abrams has to be given all the credit.
Yes, fingers crossed, though. Let's be like the Jewish people on Kenahara on that. Let's make it, you know, let's not say too much. We want to banish the evil eye on that. You know, we want it to happen, but we can't hover over that. You know, we can't be hovering over that because, you know, God forbid we're stuck with Mitch McConnell. And speaking of Mitch McConnell and flimsy Graham Cracker, I just want to say that, you know, even though I'm a new person to Philadelphia, I thought that I can't use obscene language on the show. So I'll just say the S word, that S-H-I-T. From South Carolina, daring to criticize, saying that, well, you know, I'm sorry, I still have more than three teeth in my mouth. you know, that Philadelphia, their elections are as crooked as a snake. Let me tell you something, flimsy Graham Cracker, crawl back in the closet, first of all, where you belong.
Yeah.
With whatever boys you're renting from a gas station men's room, you know, on a Saturday night. And secondly,
are you a comedian? What is your occupation?
You dare to talk to us about crooked? The state that brought us Dylann Roof, a state that you're talking to us about honor or integrity or anything, and you're the state that brought us Dylann Roof?
Yeah.
My God. Crawl back in a men's room in some filthy gas station and get down on your knees and pray to the latest boy that walks in there. You have no business criticizing anyone ever again. The most two-faced senator of all time. He had his head so far up Donald Trump's ass every other week and then would dare to turn around and criticize Donald Trump. It's like, oh my God, oh my God. Talk about selling your soul to Satan, you know, so he can just keep his damn mouth shut.
Yeah, but they elected
sorry.
Him and also McConnell and Collins. I'm amazed
I know.
By that.
I said,
well,
and Cornyn.
Collins was very slender and people are pissed off in Maine. I'm hearing from the direct pipeline, but As far as McConnell, I kept saying this ahead of time, guys. Remember, I said he's got that state in his pocket. He took up ballot boxes. He did anything he could. He cheated his way in and cheated his way out. It's the only thing that's going to take him out of the Senate is, you know, heart stopping. you know.
Well, actually, he doesn't be in such good health. He's looked terrible lately. People are wondering if he has some kind of a problem. He might. Yeah.
My wife has been in the medical field ever since she and I. Oh, by the way, this November the 14th, Carol and I have been married 33 years, and we dated 2 years from there. So
congratulations.
We've been together for 35 years. Yes. Best thing I've ever walked into my life. And
may I ask you something, Wayne?
Yeah.
How does she tolerate you?
I don't know. You know, the 35 years we've been together has been really easy for me. I can't make that claim for her.
And just, hey, Wayne, when they start pulling that crap, you just tell them, you know, it's just one thing that always gets them, navy white, navy white.
There you go.
The girls watch the girls, watch the boys, and the girls go by. Navy whites always get me. But the thing is that yesterday, what was really fabulous was to see that, I turned it over to BBC America, and I was listening to them just, they were like going crazy, which, you know, the Brits don't usually do on television. It tells you who was on and who was off, but they had film from Paris, and Paris is my favorite city. And I just, you know, the mayor of Paris, and somebody, she was just over the top, you know. It was nice. It was nice to hear. It was nice to see. But gentlemen, it's merely a torch in this darkness right now, and there's a lot more to go, and we have 70 days more of
Trumpism.
Well,
that's a very good point. Let me interject here.
It's his dirty trick.
Let me interject here real quick.
And Wayne, just one second.
Go ahead.
The worst numbers. COVID is blowing the hell up right now. And by Turkey Day and Christmas, I think people are going to be hunkering down on their own. You know?
Very true.
Yeah.
I just saw 1,000 cases a day, people dying, and
it's more than
it's
that.
It's going to get worse. Right. Well,
I mean, 100,000 it was a couple of days ago. You know what it is now?
3 record-breaking days in a row was over
26,000 the last couple of days, yeah.
I take heat for this on my own blog and my own show and everything. I'm sorry to say this, but I said it to a couple of waitresses yesterday. George and I went out to a safe distance lunch yesterday at one of our favorite little restaurants here. And the day was glorious, of course. The weather here is just spectacular, 70 degrees and sunny and just beyond beautiful with the leaves. And we were eating this wonderful lunch, and the waitresses were glowing. And so anyway, we were all talking, and they said, well, you two have a wonderful day today. And I said, you have a wonderful day too. Thank you so much. And I said, and be above and beyond the weather, I'm sorry you have to work indoors, but at least the politics, and I risked saying it to them. I risked saying that to them, you know, thinking that they might have been for Biden. And they jumped right on. They said, oh, yes, the politics. It's, my God, it makes floating from the table to table with entrees a dream come true. And we were joking about it. And the thing that got me was I said, one of them said, of course, the COVID situation, they're exhausted as wait people. And
yeah.
I said, yes, I said, it's, and I said, having been a waitress myself over the years and a butler and different things, I've been in service all of my life off and on during my career. And I said, but, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but the fact that we've had 3 record-breaking days in a row and no let up in the foreseeable future, it's sort of like God giving the finger to Donald Trump and his family and saying, in case you're in doubt about how the universe around you feels as you exit Washington, D.C., your demise and your whole defeat is being punctuated by the fact that people will always remember that the plague was climbing and climbing and climbing under your watch as you left Washington, there was no relief. You made no attempt with your idiot Dr. Birx and your fired Fauci. You dismissed him. You have made no effort. And this is the sign that you must get out of town, that you are presiding over a country which is hemorrhaging deaths on this plague. And it's almost Shakespearean, that the demise is so big. It's so big. It's like Macbeth's end in the play Macbeth. Everything, the signs, the woods are walking toward them, everything, the signs, all that we don't have is Mars and Jupiter going off cycle and cascading around a comet. What if suddenly we have a comet? It's like he is literally being told, you are a failure. You're the Gibraltar of failures. You're a gigantic, jiggling pile of pink monkey pudding, and you are being ejected from Washington, D.C. The only thing I can say that would be better is that at this point we should burn the White House down, because I don't know how they're going to clean it. How are they going to clean
it? Definitely needs
no, seriously. Seriously.
No,
honestly, Gwendolyn, I want you to tell me, would you sit on a toilet that he had sat on? Would you? No. Better to have a plumber rip out the bathroom and then to realize, oh, dear God, James Madison's sofa, his Empire sofa from 1817, a priceless antique, chop it up and throw it into a bonfire. There's no linen in there that could be used. I wouldn't draw a curtain. I wouldn't fluff a pillow.
You know that White House staff, the maintenance and the kitchen staff and the maintenance staff, except for personal chefs, have always been generational people.
Yes,
I mean,
and
they, in this administration, was the first time that they lost more than half of those generational people. So you will see them come back around. You will see them come back around and say, hey, look, excuse me, I'm putting my hand up here, remember me. I think that will happen. Of course they'll fumigate the place because of COVID. It is COVID central right now in Washington. It's the hottest spot. It's the hottest spike in D.C. right now is the White House. They do have to fumigate. But we have been in my community spending all kinds of, and I know a couple of the guys, a couple of the curators over at the Native American Museum, the new one in D.C., it's really beautiful, and asking them to ask the 13 grandmothers and chiefs from, or the medicine men from several nations, to come in and smudge the ground and the house, just a major smudging. And do you know how much that will do for indigenous communities and people of color to see that kind of open, you know, invitation to bring culture back into the White House open-heartedly like that, instead of saying no Muslims allowed? You know, it's the opposite effect. So I'm very hopeful that the Biden-Harris people will get a hold of this, and that the curators from the Native American Museum will actually reach out to them and say, we'd like to do this for you, for the country, you know?
Yeah.
Because
when you think about it, the stories about Richard Nixon as he was unraveling and everything and wandering through the empty, darkened White House, you know, mumbling to himself or, you know, crying or whatever, and Henry Kissinger, and just all these anecdotes about how he would be looking at pictures of presidents, past presidents, and talking to them or whatever Nixon was doing. Can you imagine what the servants, the service people in the White House have been hearing and witnessing over the last 3 weeks? And of course, building, and will continue to. Who knows what temper tantrums are going on, you know, upstairs in the White House. And of course, the butlers and the maids and the, you know, whatever, they're all witnessing. They can hear through the doors when he's like screaming or breaking something or whatever. I'm wondering what the conversations are, and what, if Nixon was having that much trouble, what must Trump? Because Nixon, for all his flaws, was a highly intelligent man, was very well respected by foreign leaders, even though he had his own character flaws. But this was not Satan. We didn't have a satanic elf in the White House. We didn't have some. We didn't have an imp from the ninth circle wandering around. You know, this is Caligula. We have a Caligula in our own 21st century. What on earth did the butlers and maids and cooks and chefs hear and see in that White House? I would love to have a book come out about what happened over the last month. Of course, the last 4 years, but definitely this last month and the next, whatever it is, 70 days. Imagine what is being said and done in the White House. What is being said and done?
You know, the gal, Ron, what's the gal's name from NPR, the black lady who does the NPR now, took over for Gwen Ifill. She is, that's where she's getting her dope. She's hearing stuff. And you know, these guys have got people that will talk to them. And the what they said yesterday was that he's having fits and screaming and has banned any kind of service in the residence because that's where he is. And that's yesterday. And that in the West Wing, there are two camps now. The ones who are collecting to get the hell out because they don't want to go down so badly. And the other ones who are working furiously to try and get Republicans to stand up for him right now. So it's madness. It's chaos in that.
Well, I know that everybody is thinking, first of all, I have a confession to make. I'm not an evolved soul. I am just not. I have some great virtues, but I have some terrible character flaws. And one of my character flaws is that I am not an evolved soul. I'm an Aquarius, and I was born in the year of the dragon, and I love history, and I read a lot, but I am basically a Neanderthal. And so this is where I stand.
What a comedian, that's real.
I'm thrilled that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and everybody is like, they want to, you know, extend the olive branch and the hand to shake and all of that. And I have been known to do those things too. But I will never forget, and by implicitly, I will never forgive Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham. I will never forgive or forget Tom Selleck. I will never forgive or forget Pat Sajak. I will never forgive or forget people who have actively, gleefully, Chris Christie. I don't care that he's backpedaling now. He's a fat bag of monkey pudding. Whatever he's doing now is what allies of Adolf Hitler did when the bunker was going down. They suddenly were scattering and putting on Russian military uniforms, you know, that they took off dead bodies and tried to, you know, make it out that they have, we worked for him, but we weren't like completely. No, you sold your soul and now into the furnace you must go. I'm telling you right now, and that's why I tell my own home audience, Gwendolyn, that red voters – if you have red voters in your family and friends and you're going to do Thanksgiving with them, you can say what you can pass them. There's your sweet taters with the marshmallow bits on top. You can pass them their cranberry sauce with the extra orange peel on it. You can pass them the deep fried turkey that you did in the driveway. But I want you to remember that when you look them in the eye and you're a gay person, or any of the minorities that Donald Trump rejected, a woman who might need an abortion, the Hispanics, oh my God, don't get me started there, blacks, foreigners of any sort, Montenegrins,
children at the border,
Pakistanis, anyone, and then the ultimate, lesbians and gays and transgenders. When you look in Uncle Ned's face or Aunt Delia's face and you know that she voted for Donald Trump, You just make sure that your Newsday print inside your head, going around and around, that Newsday teletype thing in Times Square, they hate you. They hate you. Aunt Celia hates you. Because Katie, in the way we were, is right. People are their principles. People are what they stand for. People are what they say and do. People are what they say and do. And if Aunt Delia voted for Donald Trump and for Lindsey Graham and for Bitch McConnell, she hates you. Just remember
that.
That's true. And you can do whatever you want. But as far as I'm concerned, they hate me. They hate me. And so we'll figure out how to work with them in the next 2 years and 4 years. But I will never forget that Tom Selleck hates me, that Pat Sajak hates me. I will never look at them differently.
Franklin Graham and Pat Boone. How's that for other names?
Yeah.
Oh, those are, yes, that. But you're talking, now you're getting down into the ninth circle. I'm talking Pat Sajak from, you know, the what's that idiot show? America's
Wheel
Game.
Wheel of Fortune.
Squeal of Fortune. Listen, he hosts that Squeal of Fortune. His job is to stand there like an idiot. And his pal, you know, Vanna White, they're not rocket scientists. They didn't have to volunteer that they thought Donald Trump was a dream come true. But they did. And by doing that, I will never forget. They hate me. They hate me.
Well,
and so I'm just going to say right now, I don't care. I think it's great that everyone wants to build bridges, blah, blah, blah. But I'm telling you right now, do not be surprised if Lindsey Graham and Tom Cornhole and Snoozin' Collins and Bitch McConnell turn on us and try to stonewall us the way they did Obama. I know
I think they probably will
want to
do that.
Not to.
They are.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I'm going to follow up from my vantage point. I like what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. But when the Dixie Chicks came back with their next album after their little soiree with being purged by the country western stations, and they kind of came back, they came out with an album called I'm Not Ready to Make Nice Yet.
Yeah.
That's my vantage point. I am not ready to make nice yet.
Can you guys tell me, who's the wonderful black journalist, shaved head, who's been on MSNBC? Jerome Johnson?
Yes.
Okay, they've had all the talking heads on, and I love all of them.
John
says
it's Jason Johnson.
I love all of them. But, yeah. I'm sorry, what is it?
Jason Johnson.
Okay, and he's the black guy with the glasses, right?
Yes.
Okay, he was on the other night as they were still tallying, and you know they were going to everybody. Oh, my God. Nicole Wallace, I adore her. All of them, Steve Schmidt, adore them.
Even though she works for George W. But she's a good lady.
I know they're lapsed Republicans, but this is what I wanted to say. That Johnson said something that was, they threw it to him and they said, what do you want to tell us? And he said, well, I just want to be clear about something I feel. And that is that there's all this celebrating and we're about to declare Biden, et cetera, et cetera. But we must not forget that the profoundly dangerous Republicans are still in the Senate and Congress.
Right.
They're still in play, A. And B, whatever happens, this country, still half of its population, basically, are those people.
Are
people
70 million people
celebrated
that
and voted. And voted. You know, everyone today, Chuck Todd was saying, well, we won the presidency. We don't know if we're going to win the Senate, and we still have the House, but let's be honest, state legislatures went Republican, and we lost a few seats in the House. So this country, I don't know what's going on, and Gwendolyn, you're the empress of the planets, but this may be the dawning of the age of Aquarius, although speaking as Aquarian, I haven't won the lottery yet, so I don't know what that's all about. But the bottom line is this. If this is the age of Aquarius with thinking and universal love, blah, 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 Jerry Ragney's lyrics to Hair, who I happen to know. I used to know Jerry Ragney before he perished.
Cool.
But that whole thing, we may be the age of Aquarius, but this country has a real rightward lean. What's going on?
Well, here's the thing, though, you know, and you know history really well, Mommy. You know history really well. And so does Ron. And here's the thing. After the French Revolution, it got nasty. And yet, look what came out of it in the end. There was a complete paradigm shift. Right now, what we are going through is a darkness that is exposing the patriarchy of the last, really, 6,000 years of humanity. Yeah. And this paradigm shift is really quite huge, because if we don't make it through to the other side, if we don't change, if we don't shift, you know, after the last Black Plague, what came from that was a paid worker and health care and better doctoring and all kinds of things. I mean, this aeon, this new aeon, is about consciousness, the evolution of consciousness. And to get there, we have to open our hearts. And that's why racism and all of it has been on the table. All of it, genocide, I mean, everything has been on the table right now and with Trump. And we have to go through this darkness to get to the other side, because without it, we will, it's like you say, we've still got those people. Well, we've got to show them up. We've got to, more people voted than ever before this time. What shocked
on both sides.
Really, yeah, that's what really shocked me was that it was so close. I would have thought it'd be more than 7 points. I would have thought we would have been a landslide, but it didn't. So there's still, but I think in the next year, with what the Democrats, because, you know, Kamala Harris is a smart lady, and the women that are empowered in the Congress right now are not stupid. And Nancy Pelosi, for all the stuff, she is one hell of a chess master. And I think she's going to make it her last act to bring all of this out into the open. And these Republicans are going to pay for it. They are going to get exposed. They are going to get exposed more than just us saying it on the news. There's no more fake news. Think about that.
Yeah.
No,
well, it's interesting. The Republican Party was born out of catastrophe. You know, the Whigs and all of the know-nothings.
Yes, all
of those weird little fractious parties in the 1800s. And it was so many different causes and things.
The 1850s,
you know, above and beyond slavery. It was all sorts of things. And the Republican Party, and Lincoln was the first president out of the Republican Party, which was considered to be a progressive and dangerous party. After all, what they did, they freed the slaves. This was the end of the world. And so maybe this is the death of the Republican Party. Maybe we're going to see that Republicans, and it's a shame because I love elephants and it's a wonderful symbol, but maybe, you know, maybe, and really, who wants a jackass, you know, as a symbol of the party? But I mean, it's just interesting. There's two things that I want to just bring up, and I want to hear what you guys think. One is the great line. It's not the first time it's been said, but from Angels in America, one character says, "Well, after all, the world only spins forward," and that's a wonderful old saying. Tony Kushner didn't invent. Tony Kushner didn't create that line. He's quoting something else, but the world ultimately, for all its setbacks, it takes 3 steps forward and 1 step back. It takes 2 steps forward and 1 step back. It takes 8 steps forward and 3 steps back. But the world indeed is spinning forward. And the other thing I want to just say that gives me hope in all of these dire times is that I know all of you have noticed this. You can't turn on TV now. This is so funny. We were talking about it with an Uber driver yesterday. You can, first of all, screw a commercial where oatmeal is being sold by a Black father, mother, and child. That's old news. That's like those are passé. 90% of the commercials on TV now for insurance, a muffler, spark plugs, thumbtacks, Jell-O, are mixed race couples.
It's like
the Black father has got a child and he's feeding her, and he'll call off, say, off screen, and he'll say, "Honey, are you going to eat breakfast? And she'll come in, and she's a white woman with glasses, a $6,000 business suit, and a briefcase. So he's the stay-at-home father. He's black. She's white. And then it turns out another child comes in, and they've got two mixed-race children. It's like,
right,
this is shorthand now. And what that is symbolizing for me is that there is no you have to be a three-toothed hillbilly from Butt Poke, Idaho. You have to be from Nowheresville to not have a gay uncle, a lesbian gym teacher, a mixed-race couple down the block. The world is gay, lesbian, black and white, Indian and Pakistani. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. And this is what children are growing up with. And this is where even children whose parents are three-toothed hillbillies, eventually those kids at 11 or 17 or 21 are going to look at their parents and say, under their breath perhaps, at Christmas vacation when they're home from college, dear God, my parents are three-toothed hillbillies, and I love them and I bless them, but they're yesterday's mashed potatoes. As Rose says in Gypsy Rose Lee, you're yesterday's mashed potatoes. You know what I mean? It's like your notions of the world being flat, your sad, forlorn bigotries and things are sad.
That is true. Do you know that basically I can remember as a kid, and I saw television change people too. It's when it became socially unacceptable to be such a racist, to say things and you know, cordon off anybody because of race or whatever. It just became more and more unacceptable, and it was because of Archie Bunker and then Maude.
Maude was another one. Oh, by the way, Maude was born and raised in Cambridge, Maryland. I know people who actually grew up with her.
Beatrice Arthur?
She was great, right?
Yeah. And so it's quite true. And in the last 20 years, I had to applaud the shows that are actually coming on right now with their new seasons. And one of them is the Roseanne-less Conners, which is being produced by Sarah Gilbert. And they came on and they are addressing stuff from that working class position, but just exactly what Mummy just said, what Sybil just said, about, you know, the children saying to the parents, you know, you're really out of it. You don't, you know, it's exemplified on that show. And Lori Metcalf plays the aunt, and she does the crazy end of it. And they're wearing masks. They're going back to work masked up in a factory. And they're just exemplifying really how people are trying to struggle to get along and losing homes. They got an eviction notice in the first opener. I mean, when you've got that kind of, and then Black-ish is on right after it, which is a completely black show, which is hysterical, funny, great to take your mind off of things type of stuff. Yeah, that's why you watch these little comedy shows. It's like Will and Grace coming on, and all of a sudden, you know, people, you know, so what? You're gay? You know, everybody had to have a gay friend in the crowd because it was cool. Because, you know, Will and Grace. Art is the revolution. Art has always been the revolution. And wait till you see what they put back on the theater stage when they can do it. Can you imagine what's coming onto the stage? I mean,
love the theater. I am so excited. The future is so bright for us. It's going to be so bright for us right now. And the old dinosaurs are not going to be able to handle it. They're going to implode and their heads are going to just cave in.
I know, Ron, you've been thinking about What did you think about, I thought one of the most important things that was said last night by Biden was that the first thing that they're going to do the day one that they get on is to put in a COVID case.
Yes, and also the fact that they're going to move. They're going to move to try to create a committee to figure out who the 565 kids' parents are. You know that he's put into. I mean, that's in light of everything that's happened. I think that thing about the kids, the refugee kids, more infuriates me than almost anything else. You know.
Well, as you know, Ron, my past experience. And so this is kind of to bring you up to date. In the mid-70s, the Navy sent me down to South America to help prop up Pinochet in Chile and that military junta in Argentina.
Yeah.
When I came home, they sent me down there, we're going to fight communism, right? I'm doing air quotes here. But when I came home, especially what I saw in Argentina, I realized that I had not done those people any favors. It's one of those things you didn't see firsthand, but you knew it, and they have their Patriot Act, where they could just listen in, phone wiretap somebody, and all it took was somebody saying, I think we were better off on the Peronists instead of this military that's taken over. That was all they needed for it. They drew 1964 Black Ford Falcons. That was the Secret Service. They would show up in the middle of the night, grab the young couple and their infants and, small children.
Take them to the stadiums, yeah.
Well, yes. And, the thing is the mother and father, the young mother and father would be basically tortured to death and buried out back in a max grave behind the Federale barracks, and the children were given up for adoption. This is the period now they call the Lost Children of Argentina, where grandmothers are marching in the plazas down there saying, "Where is my grandchild? What have you done with these?" Right?
Yeah.
And when I see my own country now under this Trump administration separating children from people who are trying to escape the hounds of hell from where they came from.
Right.
Right. And it's legal to come and ask for asylum. They were not entering illegally. They were coming asking legally for asylum. And that's what they did to those parents and those children.
Well, they have to open administration.
I want to see more trial, like the Nuremberg trials, for everyone who was complicit in that act.
Yeah.
And the one that would be at the top of the list other than Trump is Stephen Miller.
Yeah.
I want it all the way down to the guy who was working in the concentration camp that gassed children, in Germany. I want the same thing here. The man, I was just doing my job. I was told to take these children from their parents and put them in these cages over here. I want his ass on a spike.
You wonder why I advocate setting up bonfires. And I'm telling you, you people say, "Oh, Sybil, you're just so naughty when you say those things." You don't really believe in setting up bonfires. It's like, and I've been advocating guillotines for ages, and I have my Madame Defarge outfit I've been doing that for years now, but I have decided that bonfires take longer and are more terrifying a way to die, A, and B, the list, like in the French Revolution, the list of hundreds that would be put into the bonfires, it's huge, because I agree with you. The nose-picking three-toothed hillbilly that grabbed the little El Salvadorian child and threw him in the cage. No, you're right behind Donald Trump. It's like Trump, Melania, their son, the weird
Ivanka.
Son who doesn't smile, all of them. They're skank litter. I call them the skank litter and their thug gangs. They all belong in an oven. They all are guilty of shocking crimes. And they're going to get away with it because we're America and we didn't get surrounded the way Germany did. Germany paid, and it was because they were surrounded and they were defeated. As powerful and wonderful and smart a country as they were, they weren't the supreme country. We are not surrounded. The prime minister of Montenegro that Trump pushed out of the way in that video, Montenegro, such a sweet little country, they're never going to hold Donald Trump's feet to the fire. They're never going to take Melania, shave her head, and throw her in an oven.
I do think that, here's the thing too. Deutsche Bank, backed off when he won the presidency.
Right. They were foreclosing on all his properties, yes.
Yeah, they were foreclosing on him. He's had a hold. I'm sure it's not interestless. He's had a hold on over $400 million that he had come due. And we know he doesn't have that kind of money. And I think that basically at the same time that, because Deutsche Bank had to hand over all of his banking records to the Southern District of New York. And I think, they're sharpening blades down there. You talk about Madame Defarge and the guillotine, that lady of color down there in that office is, she's polishing the blade on her own wheel right now.
Good.
They are going to get slapped with a lot more than they've gotten slapped with already. They can no longer. Oh boy, the winds are picking up here. I just heard, I think, our umbrella go. By the way, down here, Ron and I are going through a tropical depression coming
right
on hurricane watch.
It's the wrath of God upon us.
What was that, Jeff?
What was that? Oh, dear.
What?
We think the gas grill went over.
So,
is it okay? I'm sorry. Okie doke. Gentlemen, go on with the show now.
I was going to mention, too, by the way, because of where you live, how could your area reelect Brian Mast to the House?
Oh, I know. When Sam Keith was such a much better, but you know, you've got a lot of Republicans, and apparently not enough Democrats were registered here to vote.
Well, we can our people down here, including Lois Franco, against that Laura Luma nut. You know, not that she's perfect, but she still won, and so did Ted Deutch, and I'm glad of that.
Yeah. Professor, the black lady who basically orchestrated registering 800,000 people to vote, what was her name?
Stacey Abrams.
Sorry.
Somebody down in Broward, you mean?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Down in Broward County? I don't know what you're talking about. What are you referring to?
Okay. She's, they're talking
from
about
Georgia?
Making her the head of the Democratic National
Committee.
The
Abrams you're talking about in Georgia.
Yeah, I think you're going to find she already has a position in the new administration.
Yeah, well, thing is, you know, we're gearing up to make a decision on what senators' runoff are going to be there.
Yeah,
and
right.
I say,
no,
give
already,
her all the resources, the funding that she needs.
Okay.
You know, give her the tools. I think she's going to make it happen.
They're banging the drum down there. I've gotten a slew of, I have gotten a slew of emails asking for money. I've given $10 to work on the Georgia Senate race. And Abrams is already down there. She's already banging the drum and getting people together. Yeah. They're going to turn out.
Andrew Yang and his wife are moving to Georgia to help out. You know, the one who ran for president, Andrew Yang.
Okay.
Andrew Yang, Y-A-N-G, who was running for a while with his plan, you know, to give $1,000 a month. Well, he's now moving to Georgia with his wife, and they're going to really put money into the campaign, too.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
By the way, I just wrote an article I'm going to publish soon, my proposal for a Biden cabinet, and I think Stacey Abrams will be Housing and Urban Development Secretary.
What do you think he'll put in charge of? Because he can't pull any of our senators.
Actually, there are a few that could be pulled. Hold on a minute. I'll tell you what I wrote. I think Cory Booker could be. Let me see. What did I say? I'm trying to find it now. To be put in as. Hold on. To be Health and Human Services, Cory Booker, because that state is a Democratic governor. Same with Colorado. Michael Bennett, Senator Bennett's a Democratic state, was was superintendent of public schools in Denver, I think he could be secretary of education.
There's a Republican running Massachusetts, and the only one that should be looking over our finances right now is Elizabeth Warren. She pulled us out.
You can't do it.
Absolutely.
And yet there's a Republican governor in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, the Republican governor repudiated Trump, that I will say.
Yeah,
I'm with Gwendolyn.
We can't lose one senator to his cabinet, not one.
Right.
It's too risky, too risky. And it's a shame because, frankly, that debate stage, when they were all debating and I was supporting Harris, I was stunned. I thought, wouldn't it be amazing to have a woman of color as the presidential nominee? But when they were doing that, I thought that whoever won should raid that entire debate stage for his her entire cabinet. And it was but we couldn't afford it. Yeah, Pete Buttigieg education or something. You know, it should be all of them should be, you know, Elizabeth Warren, David Yang. They should all be in the cabinet, but we cannot afford to lose one senator. Not one. It's too risky. Colorado's not a blue state. It's an almost blue state. You know what I mean? These Arizona, it's not a blue state. It's almost a blue state. Yeah. But we can't, even so, he installs a senator. But then it doesn't make any difference because when election time comes, these states are too close. These elections are too close. It's very disturbing. You know, as blue voters, as progressives, I don't want to say as liberals, all of the people on the line
tonight,
liberals right now, all of us together, we are all progressives. And we have got to face the reality that, as Chuck Todd pointed out today, legislators went to the red. There were too many red voters still in this country. It's going to be another 10 years until all of these young people really move this country progressive, more progressive. It was way too close. And shame on the looting and the rioting and everything, whether it was caused by people who were genuinely trying to get an Xbox or because they were operatives from the right. That is why this election was so close. This election, if that had not happened, this election would have been much more blue than it was. And those moderates in the middle panicked. They panicked. You know, the people that could be tipped panicked.
They listened to lies.
But folks, we have to be honest with ourselves. This is Germany in 1930s. We still have blue-collar workers. We still have blue-collar workers that think that the billionaires are their friends. Just as we had Jews in Germany who thought that Hitler was just saying – we had friends. My family had friends who were Jewish escapees from Germany, and they had stories about the fact that when Hitler was trying to pull Germany out of the Depression, the crash and the Depression and everything, he would say things, and they said, well, we're good Jews. We're good Germans. We're Jewish, but we're good Germans. Fathers would have medals of honor from having served in World War One. He's not meaning those things. He's saying bad things, but he's just trying to pull the country out of the Depression. He's not going to do that stuff. And the bottom line is, he did. We had friends who said that their friends didn't believe it until they were being led naked into showers where there was stone soap in the soap dishes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that's what's happening here. We have workers in this country, blue collar workers, who still believe in the trickle down theory. And the trickle down they're hearing is the sound of the 1% urinating on their heads.
That's
the trickle down theory. Is
to
the
mention that I have a colleague
working class
whose family lives in Ohio, and of course he definitely is a progressive, but he couldn't convince his own brother or father to vote against Trump, and he's disgusted. But he says, you know, these are people who are struggling, and they live off Social Security, and also government jobs, basic jobs, and he just can't convince them to leave the Republican Party, you know.
If Mitch McConnell had his way, they would wipe out Social Security.
Absolutely.
This is why I said to Gwendolyn a month ago, I wish Trump and all of them had won. Because what I worry about is when the stock market crashes and when that $1 trillion deficit comes home to roost, I pray that people don't blame Harris and Biden. I wish that we would finally have a revolution where that 1%, the Romanovs and the Bourbons, Marie Antoinette and Nicholas and Alexander, were all in the palace. And when this all comes crashing down, we need our own revolution where people are torn out of their White House, their Winter Palace, their Versailles, dragged into the street and killed for what they have done. This is ridiculous. And we have a $1 trillion deficit, which someone is going to pay for. And I just pray that it doesn't happen under the Democrat watch. I just hope, because that is going to be a catastrophe.
I'm going to support exactly what you said there with a story. I have a very good friend who has his own business. And when Obama won the election, this is now after the final year, they had to pull Obama and McCain off the road because this country, the whole global economy was devastated. It was destroyed. There was
no
economy.
Right, I remember, yeah.
And then when Obama came in and he started their processes, damn if there wasn't him and many other voices, this old Navy buddy of mine, and all their voices, blamed their downturn in their business on Obama.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I said, dude, where are you living? And the thing is, and you're right.
He saved the auto industry. He saved the auto industry.
Yes.
Always happens. The Democrats come in and clean up the financial wreckage of Republicans. Always.
By the way, I have a T-shirt that has the sign of the Democratic donkey or ass. It says, Democrats cleaning up Republican messes since 1933.
Yeah. And so we'll continue on. I have my son-in-law, economics major, mortgage broker, and I talked with him about it. I've actually got a big bulk of my 401k out of the market right now. I pulled it out because I knew the stock market was going to crash there in the late winter, early spring. And because of the shit that Trump was doing.
But the new markets have already opened up. COVID has seen to that. We're doing business online. The shopping networks are watching their numbers climb. They're going to see them climb even more because they'll be smart enough to take advantage of it and diversify their department.
Yeah. You're correct, Lynn. What I'm saying is there's a lot of bank loans on commercial real estate. There's 150 malls. There's two guys in like 150 malls.
They're
just filed for bankruptcy because they can't make their loan payments on those malls. That is just the beginning of a domino effect.
Yes, and
there's already
a lot of money, a lot of new money, most young money, that wants to grab up those things and make them into affordable apartment housing for students and workers.
Moving into the malls.
You know,
where you go into the mall, right? You got your urologist, you got your cardiologist. You just go down the halls, what had been, the Gap, Bed Bath & Beyond, and things like that. You're going to see the medical aspects like that.
I've lived in New York for many decades and saw one building boom after another. The skyline of New York went from like the statue, the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building under my watch to those two and then the World Trade Center. And then from those three to and on and on. And every 10 years it would go through this shocking skyline change. The skyline of New York would change every 10 to 15 years dramatically.
Okay.
The skyline would be shocking. And this just finished. We just finished one before COVID. Over the last 4 years, we've had a shocking building boom. So shocking, in fact, that they've taken loser real estate like the Hudson Yards, the train yards on the Hudson River, which were just like open train yards and places where they parked Con Ed trucks and everything, just really slummy and industrial, and have turned it into a new city. When you look at that area, that Midtown area, especially with the High Line, it looks like George and Jane Jetson's city. The skyscrapers are new 21st century glass buildings that lean to the left and the right. They don't even look like they're going to stand up. They built those in droves. Hundreds of those buildings are all over the place. And what's ironic is that, A, people are moving out of the city in droves. The people who can afford to live in those are moving out of the city in droves,
right.
A.
Right.
And B, the businesses after this COVID thing, the corporations are saying, we don't need to hire all those people. We don't need a footprint anymore. We don't need all that square footage,
right.
Because
well,
so much of
yeah.
our workforce is going to permanently work from their dining room table. So what are they going to do with that? Turn it into affordable housing for the poor? And especially on the 80th floor, a person on welfare is going to live in a triplex on the 80th
weirder,
floor of one of these new skyscrapers with granite bathtubs.
Happened. Weirder stuff has happened. But here's the deal, guys. We got about 30 seconds left of show, and I want to thank Professor Ron for being with us today. And
thanks. It was great. It was great discussion today.
Sybil, thank you, Mummy, for coming in. It's been a delight.
Always.
We need
always
you more
a pleasure,
often.
Sybil. Always. A pleasure.
I would say this: our good friend Jack will be with us soon again, and. As he says, you know, keep pushing forward, but, you know, let's just take a moment and say, hey, there's a torch at least lit in the darkness, and to stay
yeah.
safe, hunker down and keep your eye on the what's going on, because it's hopeful, but really keep your eyes open. Thank you,
yeah,
gentlemen.
Very good. Good night,
and
all.
Thank you, honey.
That's our show for tonight. We'll be back next Sunday on Here Be Monsters Radio with the Sunday Show, a roundtable of some sanity and some lunacy. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.